From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Waugh. This week we have a special program for you. We're looking at what the heck is happening with Alaska salmon this year. We talk with reporters in different regions of the state to see what is going on in their area. Our special salmon roundup on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
There's something weird going on with the sockeye salmon runs returning to Alaska's streams and rivers this year. In some places, like Bristol Bay, the runs are strong. In others, like the Copper River or the Kenai River, they're much weaker than expected. In some places, the sockeye are unusually small in size, while in others, sockeye of a certain age appear to be missing entirely. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, Rasha McChesney talked to reporters and biologists and has this special salmon roundup. She starts in Juneau, where she went to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's lab to look for clues.
There are odd things happening with sockeye salmon all over the state. In southeast Alaska, one of the first Fish and Game staffers to notice an unusual trend was Iris Frank. In fact, she's been talking about it for a few years now.
Is this your lab?
Well, this is where we age scale. We kind of call it a lab.
Frank works in this lab in Juneau that looks, well, like it hasn't changed much in the 32 years since she got there.
So we get these scales in.
I have to say, this machine looks like something that belongs in the library in the 1970s.
Well, you know, this is my baby.
I'm sorry, I just insulted your baby.
No, you didn't. But here, why don't you go ahead and pull up a chair?
We're using this 30-year-old microfish machine to look at a blown-up image of a sockeye salmon scale. There are these ridges. They look a lot like fingerprints. Well, fish prints. Anyway, they carry a lot of information about what that salmon has been doing since it hatched, and Frank is an expert at reading them. And in the last few years, she's noticed that on some fish, those ridges are getting closer and closer together. That could mean the fish aren't growing as fast or as big as they normally do.
You know, the hairs on the back of your neck kind of standing up going, well, that's really odd.
Have you ever seen anything like it before?
No.
In 30 years?
No. This is really a real odd happening.
She doesn't know why it's happening or what it means, but it's a clue. And it's part of a pretty big mystery. Elsewhere in the state, Fish and Game scientists are scratching their heads over smaller sockeye, sockeye that are trickling into rivers and lakes where they normally come back strong, or whole age groups of sockeye that appear to be missing. And several say they're wondering what's happening to the sockeye once they leave Alaska's freshwater and head out into the ocean. So I headed to the Alaska Fisheries Science Center in Auk Bay to talk to a scientist who specializes in researching salmon at sea. His name is Ed Farley. I met up with Farley in his office and talked him into playing a game of Clue to see if he could solve the mystery of who or what is affecting the sockeye salmon. If you're like Farley and I, you've probably not played Clue in a while, so a quick refresher.
Mr. Green, is it Mr. Green?
The object of the game is to solve a murder, to figure out who did it, with which weapons, and in which room in this giant mansion.
Okay, so Miss Scarlet is our character. I'm going to put this little red thing over here.
Miss Scarlet is the sockeye. In this game, she's the one who dies. Next, what killed her or stunted her growth? Farley says there are a lot of potential weapons. One big one is the blob. That's the warmer than normal water that moved into the North Pacific about 4 years ago. It stayed unusually hot through 2016 in the Gulf of Alaska shelf, some 4 to 6 degrees higher than normal. Farley says that shelf is where young sockeye salmon from Alaska go to eat once they venture out from their home rivers. So we'll start with the candlestick as a weapon, and I'm going to say that it represents warm water in the Gulf of Alaska.
What would be the problem with that for a sockeye?
So that's going to increase their metabolic rate, so they're going to have to find more food.
So it's warmer, and it's making those sockeye salmon hungrier. But something else happens during this time period, too, another murder weapon. Farley says a team of researchers did surveys on the food web during those hot years and found that some of the key food for young sockeye salmon was missing.
So, like, the copepod group was way down.
That's a high-fat bug that sockeye eat. They're basically eggs with legs.
with the loss of that prey base and the increased temperatures, it's sort of a double whammy.
We need one more murder weapon for pink salmon. There's evidence that they compete with sockeye for food in the North Pacific. And Farley is being really particular about which one we choose.
Is it the gun or the pipe wrench or the rope?
I wouldn't say it's the gun.
Is that, is that like a scientist's worst nightmare?
One of the things that you have to always understand is that the pink salmon aren't really the smoking gun.
The room. Where did all of this happen?
If you had to pick a room that the Gulf of Alaska would be, which one would you pick?
No, the dining room.
Why?
Because that's where they need to feed.
So far, this is going way better than a normal game of Clue. We have a victim, three weapons, and a room. In fact, we're doing so well that Farley is ready to guess what happened to Miss Scarlet.
I would say it's the candlestick and the knife.
In the dining room?
Yep.
Wait, so you think you've already solved this?
In my opinion, that's where this mortality would have occurred.
Farley thinks that Miss Scarlet died in the dining room and it took a lot of weapons to kill her. He suspects that some of the sockeye salmon returning to Alaska this year went out into the ocean at a time when they needed more food to survive, and it just wasn't there. And remember how some runs in the state were actually really good this year? Well, those same warm ocean conditions might be the culprits there as well. Warm water may have decimated the food web in the Gulf of Alaska, but there's evidence that it made the Bering Sea more fertile. And Farley says that's where Bristol Bay sockeye rear, so they were much better off than their Gulf of Alaska relatives. Now to Bristol Bay, where more than 62.8 million sockeye are estimated to have returned this year. That's the largest run on record, and the sockeye are still trickling in. Mitch Borden is the fisheries reporter for KDLG in Dillingham. I spoke with him to find out how the sockeye salmon season played out in Bristol Bay. Hi, Mitch.
Hey, Russia. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. How are things looking out there?
You know, the season's wrapping up. I was in Naknek a few weeks ago because I lived there most of the summer, and a lot of processors were leaving, getting on planes, and a lot of boats were coming out of the water. So things are, you know, quieting down for the fall in Bristol Bay.
Okay, and so you had a banner run of sockeye this year, but I'm hearing that most of the Bristol Bay sockeye seem to come in pretty small. Is that true?
It depends on what district you're talking about. Like, the star of Bristol Bay was the Nooshkak district. That's where everyone went, and that's where the majority of the run went to, you know, up the Nooshkak River, up the Wood River, up the Iagooshik. And a lot of those fish were small. People were seeing a ton of fish swim through their nets because their webbing wasn't small enough. Yeah, but in other parts, you know, there were still decent sizes.
And what else are you hearing from fish and game managers?
On the east side, things were late. Things didn't really get popping in the Naknek-Quijack district until, I think, July 14th. Like, it got so bad in that district that at one point, managers pushed fishermen into an in-river fishery, which was kind of really interesting to watch. Just imagine over 100 boats in a river jostling for fish as, like, you know, it's not that big, so everyone's right up against each other, and you can just stand on the beach and watch this line form of boats that would normally be out like a few miles offshore. That happened because the Quijack wasn't getting enough fish, but, you know, that's just because the run was late. The fish showed up, not as big as numbers as, you know, they've seen in the past, but it was still a decent run by all accounts. The last thing was, like, in one district, the Igigik district, a whole age class didn't show up. And two twos just, they don't know where they are, they don't know what happened, and no one knows if they ever will know what happened in that age class this year.
Okay, and is there anything else I should know?
One thing I didn't touch on was the Chignik communities in the Chignik district didn't have any kind of a sockeye season, and that's the main fishery they rely on. Like, I don't think they've even reached, I'd have to check the numbers, but they haven't reached their escapement goals for their second run yet. They haven't had one commercial opener, and at this point, like, people are going home. It's pretty interesting the difference each side of the peninsula in the fish returning this year.
Mitch, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. Now over to Kodiak, where some river systems are performing better than others. There are still late-run sockeye salmon expected to come in, but as it stands now, the region has had the lowest harvest in 38 years. Dacia Eaton is a reporter at KMXT in Kodiak. I checked in with her to find out about how the sockeye salmon runs went this year. Hi, Dacia.
Hey, Rasha.
Hey, so broadly, how are things looking this season?
Even though many river systems are meeting escapement here in Kodiak, the total run size is low, so some systems closer to Kodiak City proper, smaller systems, are doing just terribly with escapement numbers. And these are areas that local people rely on for subsistence fishing. These places have never opened. I checked in with Fish and Game research biologist Kevin Schaberg about this year's salmon season around Kodiak.
It's a mixed bag of doing okay or doing poor. I wouldn't say anything was doing good or, you know, or fantastic, but, you know, we I think managed effectively in the areas that have fish to achieve escapement and still provide opportunity for commercial fishermen and subsistence users and things when we can.
Okay, so it sounds like Kodiak is a pretty complex area for salmon management.
Yes, that's because you have salmon running to a number of rivers. So the managers have to balance escapements into all those rivers at the same time, and they have to balance different species going into those rivers where the run times overlap for red and pink salmon running at the same time.
So did Kevin give you some idea of why the sockeye salmon returns came back that way this year?
Well, he's doing research into why this year was so bad, especially for sockeye. He says there are several theories. Increased food competition from hatchery-raised fish and the blob, a persistent warm spot in the Gulf of Alaska, are a couple of them. The blob lasted for about 3 years and started to dissipate last year. Schaberg says he and other researchers are taking a closer look at this, and they're noticing some patterns.
A lot of the systems that are doing more poorly than others are systems that are comprised of fish that spend 3 years in the ocean, whereas the systems that are doing okay are systems that have a large component of fish returning that only spend 2 years in the ocean.
Okay, and what are you hearing from fishermen?
I recently visited Euganic, a set netting area on the west side of Kodiak Island, where I met with Toby Sullivan. He says this summer has been terrible so far.
In June, we weren't doing very well, and then in July, we weren't doing very well either. And we're kind of hoping to see a few more fish in the nets.
August 16th was the beginning of a new fishery where Kodiak area biologists began managing for both late run sockeye and pink salmon. Sullivan says the fishermen he's talked with are just hoping this summer will be saved by the late sockeye run.
The pink salmon going to Karlik this year looked really good. The red salmon, we're still waiting to see what happens.
So Kodiak area fishermen are just kind of hoping their season will be saved by late run sockeye?
Basically.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Daisha. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Rasha McChesney from Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau put together the Salmon Roundup Package.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs at alaskaboat.com.
And the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. MC at AMSEA.org.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. A big thank you this week to Rasha McChesney with Alaska's Energy Desk. Also, thank you to Mitch Borden at KDLG in Dillingham and Daisha Eaton here at KMXT in Kodiak. As always, a big thank you to everyone who makes this show possible each week, including you, our listeners, and the fishermen doing the fishing. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.